This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Could there be a little momentum today?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The past 2 days, markets have sunk. And we were beginning to think that today would continue the trend. But we got a good earnings report from Family Dollar Stores, second quarter up 33%. And we're hearing a couple of behemoth home builders will be getting together. That's coming up. First, the numbers. Dow's up about 0.75%, 55 points at this hour at 7845. The NASDAQ up about 23, about 1.5%, and the S&P up about 1% as well. European shares are mixed, although the FTSE's flat or down, the others up, and Asian markets lost ground today. Pulte and Centex, not names you probably spoke of at breakfast, but surely a mouthful in the home building market. They announced today they're getting together in a $1.3 billion stock-for-stock deal. Of course, home builders are struggling to find their footing with a tight credit market and tightwad consumers not wanting to buy so big. So let's talk to Peter Morici, professor of economics at the University of Maryland. So, professor, this is a big deal in a slumped home building industry.
Well, exactly. Home building is not the greatest business in the world. We have a tremendous excess supply of unsold homes, and the home building industry is overexpanded, much like the automobile industry. During times of easy credit, new home builders popped up, older ones expanded. Their capacity, their ability to build homes is much beyond what the country will need for the next several years. Combining home builders is a lot like merging steel mills earlier in this decade. It reduces capacity and realigns supply with demand.
What did each of these home builders, you think, bring to one another?
Essentially, what they bring to one another is the ability to scale back. Home building is not a terribly complex business, and there's too much capacity. What they will be able to do is cut their overhead and essentially enjoy a little bit more ability to constrain supply in the market. It's important to recognize that home building is not like making steel or making cars. New builders can pop up all the time. Mom-and-pop operations can come into business quite quickly. If the combined entity of Pulte and Centex seek to constrain supply, new builders will come along.
So what does this do for the markets?
The market will respond positively to a combination of Centex and Pulte because it indicates the industry is rationalizing. However, often we get a one day of good news, then the market digests its true meaning and goes the other way. This does not change the fundamentals of either company. Too many houses, too few buyers, too much capacity, too much inventory, losses ahead.
All right, Peter Morici, University of Maryland economics professor, thanks.
Thank you.
Incidentally, we hear today from the Mortgage Bankers Association that applications rose last week. All right, let's get out the bailout list. Banks, check. GM and Chrysler, check. Now some life insurers are stepping in the helpline. Many invested in those same toxic assets that got financials in trouble. The Wall Street Journal reports some relief is on the way. Here's Marketplace's Steve Henn.
Many life insurance companies invested in some of the same toxic mortgage assets that got banks into trouble. But until now, they've been cut off from federal help. Frank Keating's president of the American Council of Life Insurers.
The life insurance industry is systemic, is significant, is the largest purchaser of corporate bonds.
Life insurance lobbyists like Keating have been pushing to get some of the cash set aside for the banking bailout. Several big insurers even bought small savings and loans so they'd qualify for federal help. But that help wasn't forthcoming, at least until now.
To have us at the rail with the banks and the securities firms in terms of how all of these issues are being handled is an achievement and is a necessary achievement.
In the past few months, life insurance bellwethers have been hoarding their cash. Government aid would offer some relief, get those companies back into the bond market, and boost the entire economy. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Americans are drinking more California wine. The Wine Institute says sales were up 2% last year. And foreigners are also drinking a lot of wine from the Golden State. U.S. wine exports, most of which come from California, topped $1 billion for the first time ever. Listening to The Morning Report on Wednesday, April 8th, 2009, at marketplace.org. A lot of people wonder when the economy will hit bottom. Well, some think it already has. According to a study released today by Discover Financial Services, a growing number of consumers believe the economy's on the rebound. But despite the optimism, they're still saving every penny, as Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll reports.
Regina Whitehouse used to shop for clothes and go out to the movies with friends. Now the recently fired, turned retired, furniture saleswoman asks herself this question every time she opens her wallet.
Do I want this or do I need this?
More often, the answer is no. Whitehouse is cutting back on fun items so she can put more cash into savings and shrink her credit card debt.
I have found out the things that I think that in the past I thought I needed, I can get along very well without.
Like Whitehouse, about one-third of those in the Discover survey plan to reduce their debt. Another third say they already have. Kerry Leahy is a senior economist with Decision Economics. He says we're entering a decade where people will crave security, and that will change which industries thrive.
We, you know, have too many malls, we have too many stores, and we have too many resources allocated to retail.
He says the jobs and money will be in areas serving needs, not wants. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
General Motors is unveiling a new mid-sized crossover vehicle today in New York. Of course, that doesn't solve the question of who's going to buy a car from a company that's headed, perhaps, toward bankruptcy. But word in Detroit is that GM is preparing to take advantage of a section of the bankruptcy code that would allow it to keep the most valuable parts of its business intact. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
It's called Section 363, and it would allow the company to sell its top-performing assets and brands to a new GM right away. That's seen as a better option than breaking the company up and selling it in pieces. Kenneth Klee is a bankruptcy law professor at UCLA. He says, imagine your apartment building is filing for bankruptcy.
You could take apart the bricks and mortar and the pipes and sell all those off at auction, or you could take the apartment building and sell it as a building. It's worth a lot more as a building than it is as bricks and mortar and pipes.
The new GM building would include the most viable parts of the company, brands like Cadillac and Chevy, while leaving strugglers like Pontiac and Saturn behind. Stephen Gross is co-chair of McDonald Hopkins Automotive Practice Group. He says a 363 sale makes sense for GM, given the pressure to get in and out of bankruptcy fast.
The key problem that you have with a company this big is it can't move quickly. This will at least allow it to move faster.
The only other option, he says, would be a prepackaged bankruptcy, but that would require concessions from unions and bondholders, concessions that have not been forthcoming. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
A Dutch TV production company has come up with a new reality show, tailor-made for the fallout. It's called Someone's Gotta Go. From the European desk in London, here's Stephen Beard.
The show was dreamt up by Endemol, the company that created the hit TV series Big Brother. Someone's Gotta Go is nothing if not topical. The theme, unemployment. Staff in a firm which has been hit hard by the recession get to choose which of their colleagues should be fired or who should get a pay cut. A bit tasteless, perhaps, but Ben Fenton, media correspondent of the Financial Times, says it's part of a continuing worldwide boom in new reality TV shows.
I came across one just the other day that I thought I'd be very interested in seeing myself. It's called Angry Carpenter, and it's a Swedish reality show which is described as a home and relationship makeover. So it's kind of a combination of DIY and divorce.
He says these shows may have a cathartic effect at a time of economic stress. Someone's Gotta Go is due to be aired in the US by Fox TV. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In Zion, Illinois, the hope is on a minor league baseball team with major league backing. A contest to pick the team's name begins today. Joel Rose reports.
He played a washed-up minor league catcher in Bull Durham and a farmer who carved a baseball diamond out of his cornfield in Field of Dreams.
Hey! Is this heaven?
No. It's Iowa.
Now, actor Kevin Costner owns a stake in a professional baseball team, not in Iowa, but in Zion, Illinois, about 40 miles north of Chicago. Construction is scheduled to start next month on a $15 million stadium for the as-yet-unnamed team. Whatever it's called, Zion librarian Nancy Hilliard hopes it can draw tourists and spark economic development in a town where the unemployment rate tops 12%.
It's obviously not the high-stakes, showy aspect that you have with Major League Baseball, but it allows for local promotions. It allows for everybody to get into the game.
Zion is still struggling to recover from the loss of a nuclear power plant that closed a decade ago. City officials are hoping that minor league baseball is the answer to their prayers. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
In these days of recession and fallout, it's quite tempting for pundits to compare what's going on today with economic downturns of the past, like, say, the one from the 1930s. Commentator Will Wilkinson thinks it's a matter of history and place.
Our current economic downturn has brought to life old debates about the Great Depression, what got us into it and what got us out of it. The role of the New Deal looms large. Did it deepen the Depression, as many economic historians now say? Or did it save capitalism from itself, like I learned in sixth grade social studies? Let me tell you, people get really heated about this question. But hold on. Is this debate really relevant to our current crisis? The U.S. of 80 years ago is a strange and faraway land. When the Great Depression hit, there was no Social Security, there was no unemployment insurance, and Jim Crow was in full effect. There was no such thing as a mortgage-backed security, a collateralized debt obligation, or a credit default swap. U.S. currency was backed by gold. Financial systems all over the world have undergone a series of deep changes since the 1930s. Trying to draw current policy lessons from the Great Depression is sort of like coming up with a new strategy for the war in Afghanistan by studying the Normandy invasion. Our pundits' obsession with the Depression and the New Deal represents an all-too-typical American exceptionalism, as if only our history really matters. But an apt comparison requires similar institutions, not the same flag. If we're going to fight over history, let's fight over the recent history of the 1990s Japanese and Swedish banking crises. Let's talk about the financial collapse of Argentina, from which it has only recently emerged. All those economies were more like America's is now than America's was way back when my grandpa was playing football in a sweater and a leather helmet. So what lessons should we draw from the rather more germane recent experiences of countries with similar economies? Truth is, I don't know. Maybe I should work harder to find out. And maybe American opinion makers should spend less time fighting over FDR's enduring legacy and more time learning from the rest of the world.
Will Wilkinson is a fellow at the Cato Institute. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. Check out more Fallout coverage, too. The Dow up about 0.5% at this hour in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.